Donald Trump's crowd takes a particular pleasure in being cruel to transgender people. New rules now govern their identity on passports, access to gender-affirming care, and service with the military. Executive Order 14183, titled Prioritising Military Excellence and Readiness, bans trans from the ranks as incompatible with, and I'm quoting here, incompatible with high standards for troop readiness, lethality, cohesion, honesty, humility, uniformity, and integrity. So, women like Navy Commander Emily Schilling have been forced out.
You know, I've dedicated about 19 and a half years of service. It was my dream to join and fly for the Navy since I was little. I did the two tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, 60 combat missions. I got a lot of value at it and a lot of self-identity out of it. Later, I went on to be a test pilot and then the meritorious promotions. I have been at the pinnacle of naval aviation. I think I'm proof standing here that, you know, we are qualified to serve.
She's gone, and she's challenging her sacking. Dozens of challenges are now on foot. Several are being conducted by Shannon Minter, legal director of the National Centre for LGBTQ Rights in the United States. Shannon joins me now from Texas. Shannon, welcome to Late Night Live.
Thanks, David. I'm happy to be here.
Shannon, why does Trump crowd bother with any of this? Why are they so het up about transgender people?
Well, that is the question of the hour, I will tell you. You know, now that there is so much public acceptance and support for marriage equality and for gay people, same-sex relationships, transgender people appear to be, you know, the new target, the new kind of scapegoat of the conservative or far-right movement in the U.S. I mean, they're a very, you know, convenient political target. Most people in this country don't know a transgender person. We do know that. There's actually been research on that, and upwards of 70% of people surveyed said they have never met a transgender person. So it's really easy with that kind of unfamiliarity to foment fear, hatred, and it's been very politically convenient for the right wing in this country to use that to try to rally their base and build political support.
There are different ways of categorizing who's in the military, but a sort of basic figure seems to be 1.3 million. And I'm wondering how many of them are trans?
Very few. Probably somewhere in the neighborhood of about 4,000 to maybe 4,500.
Have they always been there?
Yes. Transgender people, you know, have served in the military forever, as far as we know. But that said, they haven't been able to serve openly in the military until about 8 years ago. The military finally lifted its prohibitions on service by transgender people. So that meant, I mean, before that, transgender people, when they're in the military, would have to suppress their transgender identity. And that meant that, you know, they weren't going to stay in the military indefinitely because you can only do that for so long. It's really only been the past really 8 years that transgender people have been able to be open, to, you know, live in a sex different than their birth sex, to go through a gender transition. That has been taking place over like approximately, you know, the past 8 years.
And for most of that time, there's been this notion around in America, hasn't there, that trans people or people who want to transition are going into the military and getting free, expensive surgery to change their gender. That seems to have sort of made a lot of people angry.
Well, you know, that is a really silly argument. The cost of medical care for a transgender person is really small. You know, it's typically just hormone therapy. That's what most people receive. That is virtually nothing. I mean, it's one of the experts, a former secretary of one of the branches, four branches of the U.S. military, testified back when Trump first tried this in 2017 that the total cost of medical care for transgender people in the military was not even budget dust. I mean, it's so small you can scarcely even calculate it.
In the list of reasons for his executive order that I read out a few minutes ago, The word that jumps out to me is cohesion. Now, this has a long history in the military, does it not?
Yes, that this concept of unit cohesion was used to justify racial segregation in the military at one point. It has been really discredited. That was always just bogus. I mean, this idea that discriminating against a group of people who wants to serve in the military and who's otherwise qualified to do so, that allowing them into the military would somehow undermine unit cohesion, is such an outdated and discredited concept, and one that's really been tainted by its association with racism. And it's really shocking to hear the administration try to revive that old rationale for bias and discrimination.
It was also used against gay and lesbians wanting to serve, wasn't it?
Of course.
Same idea that a unit couldn't fight together unless they were all straight, all white, all men, etc.
Yeah. That, and, you know, it's such a betrayal of what the military is supposed to be, and it really honestly is. I mean, the military is the most diverse workplace in our country. It really does bring together people from every identity group, every part of the country, every walk of life. And the beauty of the military is all those personal characteristics really drop away and fade away. I mean, people are united. You know, they're working towards a common mission. I mean, when you talk to people who've served in the military, to a person, they will say that that is one of the most positive aspects of service, is you get just these remarkable opportunities to get to know people who are wildly different than you, and then to discover that when you're all just united towards a common goal, that those differences really don't matter.
Have any of the people who are arguing for getting the trans out of the military bothered to present anything that we might call evidence?
No, I mean, that's one of our strongest points in the lawsuit challenging this ban, is that even though transgender people have been serving in the military now for like I said, 8 years, the military has done nothing to study that. Like, they have not examined their records. They haven't, you know, commissioned a study to see how it's going, nothing like that. They literally have like zero evidence. But on the other hand, you know, we have a lot of evidence that there's no reported problems whatsoever. Every single transgender service member we're aware of that's participating in these lawsuits has exemplary records. I mean, these are folks who are serving honorably. Many of them are incredibly skilled and talented. Many of them have received all kinds of promotions and commendations. They've been deployed in combat all over the world. I mean, there's so much evidence that this has been a great success, and zero evidence that it has posed any problems whatsoever.
Trump's executive order earlier this year not only said no more trans people can join the military, but that the transgender people in the military have to get out. And I appreciate the fact that they're not being sacked, Shannon. I'm so pleased that they're only being forced to separate. It must make it so much better for them that they're, you know, they're only separating from the military.
Yes, I know. I know you're being sarcastic there, because yes, which is simply another word for they're being sacked. I mean, they're all being forced to leave against their will. It's a horrible situation. They're being forced to go through a process. It's called involuntary separation. That is normally reserved for people who have engaged in some kind of misconduct. You know, it leaves a permanent stain on your record, makes it more difficult to get civilian employment. And it's just such a slap in the face, because these are folks who have done absolutely nothing wrong. They're meeting all the standards. They complied with all the policies and rules. They've been doing, you know, good job. So to have them put through this process as though they've done, you know, engaged in some sort of misbehavior or misconduct is really just such a terrible unfairness.
Earlier this year, the first challenges were made, and in the usual pattern we recognize in America, the lower court said this must stop, and the Supreme Court said it may continue. That surely is a really gloomy prospect, that the justices of the Supreme Court have allowed this process to get underway without a testing, a true testing of the executive order?
Oh, yes. It was bitterly disappointing. The lower courts, as you noted, we had three separate federal district courts easily come to the conclusion that the ban is likely unconstitutional. They had issued very strong opinions and strong orders enjoining it, you know, pointing out, as we've already mentioned, that the government has literally no evidence to support it whatsoever, and that the order itself, the executive order that you were reading from, openly demeans and disparages transgender people just for being transgender, you know, not for any legitimate military reasons. So we had three lower court victories, and sadly, the Supreme Court stepped in and granted an emergency order staying those lower court victories with no explanation, no written opinion. And sadly, that is, as you note, a part of a broader pattern. The Supreme Court is just very consistently reversing lower court orders that are concluding that a lot of the Trump administration policies are unconstitutional and trying to stop them from going into effect. And the Supreme Court keeps stepping in and allowing those policies to go forward.
This is ABC Radio National, Late Night Live. I'm David Marr, and I'm talking to Shannon Minter, who's the legal director of the National Center for LGBTQ Rights in the United States, about the predicament of transgender service men and women in the US military. Shannon, what I find really difficult to understand, I think a lot of Australians would, probably a lot of Americans as well, is why allow such cruel treatment of people to continue while the legality of it remains in doubt? Surely, you say, fellas, hold everything. Just pause here for a moment and we'll take a look at the legality of this executive order. But no, the court says, let it run. And it's not just in this case.
No, it's become like a very stark pattern, to the point where some of the justices who are dissenting are writing dissents that are more pointed and more sharp than anything I've seen or anyone has seen, you know, on the contemporary court. It's to the point where there's almost an open schism.
Almost bad tempered. Now.
Yeah, very much. Well, and just, I mean, I don't know bad tempered so much as deeply, deeply distressed. I mean, it is a pretty astonishing development when some of the justices are, you know, openly stating that they believe the other justices are not following the ordinary procedure and law and are just disregarding precedent and disregarding the test they're supposed to apply in order to just cater to this administration. It's really extraordinary. I mean, really, it really has taken the turn in a way that, you know, those of us who practice law and constitutional law in particular and, you know, often have cases in front of the court, I'm telling you, this is unlike anything I've seen in my lifetime.
Now, Shannon, tell us about one of your clients, Master Sergeant Logan Ireland. Now, what's his story?
Well, oh my goodness, he is so impressive. He really is. He's served in the Air Force for nearly 20 years. He has been deployed in combat all over the world. He's like a highly trained in some of the most like sophisticated types of combat, you know, that happen in contemporary warfare. He's won a Bronze Star. He's won all kinds of commendations. I mean, he, you know, lives and breathes the military. His spouse was in the military. He comes from a military family. He could not be more wholly and fully dedicated to serving the country, to putting his life on the line, to military service. And he is astonishingly being kicked out for no reason other than that he happens to be transgender.
He sort of accepted that he had to go and applied for voluntary separation. But what happened to that process?
What he applied for is early retirement, which was an option that the Air Force said would be available to transgender service members who are, you know, all of whom are being kicked out, that if you had between 15 and 20 years of service, that you could apply for early retirement. Ordinarily, retirement kicks in at 20 years.
Oh, right. So this would preserve retirement benefits.
Which are hugely valuable. I mean, we're talking about over the course of a person's lifetime, you know, quite a significant sum of money. And, you know, this is a big reason that many people join the military or agree to join the military, because it is dangerous. You're constantly relocated. You know, you can't do things people do to prepare for retirement, like buy a home, that type of thing. You're being moved all over the world. But in exchange for that, the military does provide very significant retirement benefits after you've put in your 20 years. So there's an option. The military can award early retirement to people who served between at least 15 years. He and several others who fit that criteria applied for early retirement benefits and were granted them by the Secretary of the Air Force. So now we have a second lawsuit, because after granting those benefits, which of course they've earned and deserve, they just abruptly reversed course, rescinded them, revoked them, took the order back, which, you know, you can't actually do. So we've had to file a second lawsuit on behalf of Logan Ireland and several other transgender Air Force members contesting the legality of that decision to revoke the grant of early retirement benefits.
Does this cruelty surprise you?
You know, honestly, it did. I mean, as cruel as this administration has been, this was truly shocking. Because I'll tell you, this is really sacrosanct. Like, everyone in the military understands these retirement benefits are very serious, very significant. And once an order is issued granting early retirement, the idea that that would be taken back is just unprecedented, unthinkable. So I was actually surprised that they would even – that they would take that step. I mean, it's so destabilizing. And you got to think of other people in the military who are not transgender but are watching this happen and seeing, whoa, you know, they're taking – this early retirement benefits away from these people. Why do I think they're not going to possibly take it away from me one day? It's so detrimental to just people's basic trust and faith that the institution's going to operate with any kind of integrity.
You've been fighting for LGBTQ rights for 20 years or so. What do you think the next few years looks like?
Well, it's actually been 30, but who's counting? It's been a long time.
Sorry,
yeah, a long
sorry,
time.
Mate. No, 30, it's okay. 30.
No, I've seen a lot of change. I've seen so much positive change. You know, I'm a transgender person myself. I've done a lot of work, a lot of cases, a lot of legislation. This is a very serious setback. I am very concerned about the immediate harm that's happening to transgender people in this country. I am ultimately optimistic, though. I think too much progress has been made, and I think we will make it past this very bad moment. And paradoxically, I've seen this happen before, the very fact that this administration is putting such a spotlight on the transgender community, in the short run, it's devastating. In the longer run, though, it allows people to learn more and to think about a group of people they might otherwise never have thought about. It allows us to do a lot of public education. It will eventually allow the public to get to know transgender people and to see that, of course, we're just ordinary people just like others, and that we can be a productive part of society. So I actually think in the long run we're going to be okay, but I can't say enough about my level of concern about the harm that's happening right now.
Shannon, thanks for joining us on Late Night Live.
Oh, thank you so much.
I've been talking to Shannon Minter, the legal director of the National Center for LGBTQ Rights in the United States. This is Late Night Live.